Morning, everybody. We've got a couple of different halachas, collection of halachas about mukta. Well, not that we're finished mukta, we're finishing a section of mukta, then we'll move on to another section of mukta. There's still another two or three shiurim on hilchas mukta. So we ended up with the four different types of mukta. We had klishim rachtel isur, Mukta machmas keser and kis, mukta machmas isur, and bosses ladavara asur. Now we're going to just get into a couple of halachas that pertain to some, to all. So, if you have a kli shemenata leheter, or it's a kli shemenata leisur uleheter, but the heter is the more usable function, therefore it is not a kli shemenata leisur, it's a kli shemenata leheter. What is its status? Until now, we spoke about a kli shemenata leisur, a utensil that its primary or sole purpose is to do a something which is asur on Shabbos. So it gets the status of mukta. And we have an exception, is that you can move it tzarekuf from a koma if you need it or you need its place, you can move it. But you can't do anything with this item in order to save it from damage or something like that. So the typical example, you have a hammer. A hammer is used for building. Building is asur on Shabbos. Therefore, hammer is defined as a kli shemenata leisur. But a hammer can also can be used to crack nuts. You can take a hammer to crack a nut. That's considered a tzarich gufoy. Or if you left a hammer on your chair and you want to sit down, that's considered tzarich makoymoy. You can pick it up and put the hammer away. If you left the hammer outside and it started raining, and now you're worried the hammer's going to rust, you cannot move the hammer because that's considered true as a tzarich gufoy, but that's what we call mechama letzel, is to take something to protect the mukta itself and not for a positive use of something that's mutter. Therefore, that would be also a kli shemenata leheter, utensil, which its primary purpose is for something which we may do on Shabbos, your clothing, your sheets, your chairs, your tables, your dishes, whatever. There's loads of stuff that we have in the house. We'll see there's going to be exceptions, lekula, not lechumra, on this. But a kli shemenata leheter is, to a certain extent, also a type of mukta, it's just that it has many, many heterim. And the way it's brought in Shulchan Aruch is a kli shemenata leheter, you can move afilu mechama letzel. You can even move it out of the sunshine into the shade, which means to protect it. You have something which is going to fade or become brittle, and you've left it in the, you've left a chair outside, and it's going to be ruined in the Beit Shemesh sun. So you may move it into the shade. That is even for the sake of the item itself. You left a metal item that is not mukta outside and it's raining and it's going to rust. You can bring it inside. You left something, your baby stroller downstairs in the passageway, and you now want to, now you're worried that Ganef is going to take it. So that's again to protect it. You can bring it in. That is not a problem with kli shemenata leheter. Not only are you allowed to move it to protect it, but you're also allowed to move it in preparation for future use of Shabbos. So if you have something that is now, say, out of reach, and you're able to bring it into reach, but you don't need it for immediate use, you need it for later use in the day, not a problem. You can move it because it's done for the sake of Shabbos for later use. What you can't do is to move it for no purpose whatsoever, which is not really so relevant, because interesting, even something which is moved for no purpose, there's usually a person does something. Usually most people think before they do something. I mean, we'll leave that up for discussion whether that's true or not. But I remember once a shiur by Rabbi Reuben Harnoff, and he says, you know, when you go to Sheva Brachas, so he went off on a whole tangent about how there are no droshes as chasnas today, and they make up for it pishnayim pishloisha at the Sheva Brachas, and they have droshes that don't end and come to no point, and he was quite upset about it. And he said something very interesting. He said, there was a time when a drosha at a simcha was usually a chiddush Torah. He says, there are svarim that people have written of droshes that they heard at simchas. Since today, unfortunately, people just waffle off something that they just prepared, and there's nothing of substance, and they talk and they talk and they talk and they get nowhere. It says in his family, the rule is that you minimize the amount of speakers. There's got to be someone to speak. It's got to be covered for the event, cover the Torah, but you don't go on and on and on. People also should be told they have a maximum of so and so many minutes to speak, and you give them 2 weeks' notice. It says you want them to speak with proper content, and it should be properly presented. And therefore, in his family, he said the rule is they give a speaker 2 weeks' notice before he speaks Sheva Brachas. So he was lamenting the situation that people get up and talk off the cuff, and they're unprepared, and they waffle, and they waste people's time. So how do they get into a Hilchos Shabbos Shir? He says because people then start fiddling with all the stuff on the table out of boredom, and they take those crown lids of the beer bottles, and they reshape them, and then they take the forks, and they bend the tines out of place, and then they take the plastic spoons and turn them inside out, and people have a lot of interesting things that they do in order to break the boredom of listening to drushes that were not well prepared. So that was his talk. So, but essentially, from a point of view of mukta, that's not a problem, because if a person is what they call misasik, he's fiddling. It's something that teachers go nuts about when the kids fiddle in class and they doodle and they play around with stuff because they think they're not concentrating. And sometimes it helps them, sometimes it doesn't, whatever the case is. But if a person is doodling and playing around with an item on Shabbos, says Rav Noivet, that in itself is a purpose. If you enjoy it, if you like fiddling with this item, there's a guy here on Lachish that very often walks around with a cable tie between his fingers. See him on the street, he's fiddling with him in between his fingers. Maybe he's actually a musician, so probably he loves using his fingers to do something, and when he's not playing music, so therefore he needs to fiddle with something on his fingers. Interesting. For him to take such a thing on Shabbos and fiddle with it would be part of his earning Shabbos. I mean, I've never asked him why he does it, but I imagine it's just to keep his fingers occupied, and that's a comforting feeling for him, so then it would be mutter. So what's asur is really when you move something for no reason whatsoever. It's not because it's in your way you're moving it, that's aruch mekayim. It's not because it's going to get ruined, so you're putting it out of reach of the children, or you're putting it in from the bad weather, or whatever it is. That all has a reason. It has to be totally purposeless movement that becomes awesome. Nevertheless, there's still some items that even this restriction we don't have on them. And it's brought down in halacha that svarim and food and clothing and jewelry are not included in the chumrah of a klisha menachta leheter. That means when it comes to a sefer that one can read on Shabbos, doesn't have to be sifrei kodesh, could be any sefer which is permitted to read, which is a subject in itself, what you may read on Shabbos and what not, but once you know that it's mutzah to read it on Shabbos, it's considered a sefer. Food, I think that's self-defined, and clothing and jewelry, all these items are considered as not mukta whatsoever, not even a klisha menachta leheter that you can't move them for no purpose. These things you can move even for no purpose. So it leaves us with very few items. So maybe your chair and your table, something like that. Then there's those who add that something which is in high usage or something which is related to food usage. So they point out that cutlery, cups, plates are also included in the heter of food, and therefore they also don't get a din of mukta whatsoever. And if you're bored and you want to carry it somewhere for no reason whatsoever, go, you can take an apple and you can play with an apple for no reason whatsoever. That's just a din in klisha menachta leheter. Another interesting halacha, if you have a multi-purpose tool where you have different features to it, an example would be a survival knife, a pocket knife, a Swiss army knife, or something like that, that has a knife, which generally a knife is considered klisha menachta leheter, and if it's for food, would even, according to some, wouldn't be mukta at all. But it also has a scissors. Scissors is usually considered as a klisha menachta leheter. One cuts with it, which is a problem of b'chatech, or something like that, and therefore scissors would be mukta. Or if you have a you have a pocket knife that has a saw inside. A saw is for chopping wood or cutting wood. Good, which lechayre is also on Shabbos. I say lechayre because it's not clear, but Shabur brings an interesting discussion on it. So now you've got a single utensil which has different parts to it. So he says, the Shmir Shabbos kochas, such an item is not mukta. You may use the non-mukta parts to it, such as the knife and maybe even a corkscrew or something like that. But don't open the muktzah parts. Just derech agav, if I mention cutting wood, the Mishnah Berurah mentions that cutting wood essentially doesn't have much of an isur. Says what isur is in cutting wood? So he says it could be one of two things. If you're cutting it to size, it will be mechatech. But that would mean if a person is chopping wood and he doesn't care if it's slightly bigger, slightly smaller, mechatech it's not. So the other problem is that it might be a problem of toichen, because when you cut wood, you get sawdust, and the sawdust you're making toichen could even be that with chopping wood and not sawing wood, that you're not even making sawdust, and therefore could even be that that's not an issue. So maximum it's uvdin b'chol, something like that. Chopping wood, interestingly enough, could be a problem, could not be a melacha d'oraisa, could only be a drabonon, which is very interesting, because we have the famous story of the Mekoshish Eitzim, who was caught doing a melacha, and they put him into detention until Moshe Rabbeinu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu what to do with him, and they gave him skila for being over Shabbos on a Isur D'oraisa with Eidim Vahasra. He had, there were witnesses, and he was warned, and he got the death sentence for it, and the Gemara already discusses what was he doing wrong. When the Torah uses a lot of Mekoshish Eitzim, how does that translate as? And the standard literal translation might be that he was chopping wood, is probably the one thing he was not doing. Because, as we said, chopping wood is not an issur. If he was chopping down a tree, so that's koitzer, that would be a problem of reaping, which would be, yes, would be an issur. But chopping wood into logs so you can make a fire, or even to then later processes for a carpenter, essentially, unless you're chopping it exactly to size, would not be a Isur Shabbos. So it could be that some say he was over Ma'amir, that he was gathering wood. Gathering wood is a problem on Shabbos. So it's interesting, just an aside on that issue. Another item that would have muktzah and non-muktzah would be a keyring, a keychain. If you have a keyring that has a muktzah keychain, for example, a nail clippers that is on a keychain, so you have a problem over here that you have keys that you need to use. You have a muktzah item that's hanging on the ring. What do you do? The answer is that it's, since there are items that you need and they you need them on Shabbos, so you can take those. Don't try avoid using manhandling the nail clippers, but it doesn't make everything muktzah. You can take the key ring. The best is that if you know if you're going to use these keys on Shabbos, so then separate them before Shabbos, take the nail clippers off or take the key that you need off the bunch, whichever way suits you best. So too, if you have a bunch of keys where one of the keys or one or more of the keys are muktzah keys, a key that cannot be used for Isur purpose, because its purpose is for an Isur, so that key becomes muktzah as well. So, for example, a car key. We did mention last week that essentially a person can sit in the car on Shabbos, but that's if the car has only a mechanical locking system and doesn't activate a light or any circuitry when you open the door. Most modern cars have central locking and they have lights that are connected to circuitry and all sorts of sensors. Therefore, most car keys today are klisha melachta le'isur and cannot be and should be treated as muktzah. So too, if you have like an override elevator key or key to, in some buildings, they have, in order to avoid excessive usage of the elevator, which would cause high cost to the tenants, so they put a lock on the elevator instead of a button to call it. You put a key inside, twist the key, and that calls the elevator. That key would then be muktzah on Shabbos because its primary purpose is to call an elevator, so that becomes a muktzah key. So if you have your house key, and on your house key, which is not muktzah, you also have the elevator key, or you have the car key, or both of them, what do? Again, the key, it's the ring of the bunch of keys is not considered muktzah, and you can take the bunch of keys with you, you can use the house key, but obviously, it is much better to keep a separate bunch of keys to separate the muktzah from the non-muktzah, so that you shouldn't have to be forced into a situation where you need to take the muktzah keys with you. We've said that empty paper is muktzah on Shabbos. It is set aside for writing. Could even be that it's muktzah machmas cheshvan kis, which would make it even more muktzah than klisha melachta le'isur. but lefachot, at least, it's muktamach mas isa, because it's there made to be written on. So if you have a notebook that is empty, that notebook is mukta on Shabbos. If you have a notebook that is partially used, so now you have pages that are written on and you have pages that are not written on. So similar to what we just discussed in your keyring, the part that's written on, if it's something that you consider important and you would read it on Shabbos, so then it is not mukta, and you can then take the book with you and you can move it around and you can read from it, but it is preferable not to flip through the empty pages. Here I didn't see any recommendation to slice your book in half before Shabbos. But if the written part of the book is something that you're not going to be reading on Shabbos, then you have to treat the whole book as mukta. That brings us to the end of that section. And now we can move on to other rules and regulations of mukta. So we're going to discuss migud de'iskatzoi. I've mentioned it many times. Let's now formulate it and give example. The rule of mukta is that something that was mukta ben ashmoshes, even if its status post ben ashmoshes changed and it's now in a situation where it should not be mukta, if it was mukta for the duration of the ben ashmoshes, so then, generally speaking, there are exceptions, we'll get to them, but generally speaking, it's now mukta for the whole Shabbos. So if you have something which is during ben ashmoshes, that means from when Shabbos starts until Nacht, let's just call that from Shkia till Tesa Kochavim, whatever that is. Everybody has a different Shia and a different way of working it out, but let's call it that first half hour of Shabbos. So if for whatever reason you have something which is non-edible, it's not usable, it's got an issur to eat it, like for example it would be tevel or chometz or various on Pesach or various cases like that we have something that's raw, therefore it can't be eaten. So then if it was that way ben ashmoshes, so it stays that way even after ben ashmoshes, even if the reason that made it mukta would disappear. So if you put okay, let's discuss the examples without having to make them up. We have some examples. First of all, we're going to make a difference between Gomra Bidei Adam and Gomra Bidei Shamayim. What put this item into a situation of mukta? Was it something I did? It's the way I look at this item, and therefore I'm makatzet midas. Makatzet midas means that I have taken it out of my mind. I've pushed it aside. It's something that I'm not going to keep available for Shabbos, because I cannot use it, and therefore I have set it aside. Once I've set it aside, so it's gone. But something which is against my will, and it's nothing that I did, but it happens to be, then we're going to say that it's a slightly different status. And so we'll get more into this a little bit later, but let's give some examples. When you light your candles on Shabbos, if you're using oil lights, and you're using good quality olive oil or any other edible type of oil. So you fill a cup with oil, you put a wick inside, and you light the wick. Now that oil is mukta. Why is that oil mukta? Because there's a flame there, and if you remove any oil from the cup, you're doing what's called kibui, extinguishing, even though the flame doesn't go out, but you... It's machlokes for showing him as to why it's considered kibbutz, but everybody holds it is kibbutz either because the candle was supposed to burn for, say, 4 hours. Now you took a spoonful of oil out and it's only going to burn for 3 3/4 hours. So that's a form of kibbutz where you shorten the life of the candle. Or when you take a spoonful of oil out, you lower the level of the oil. Therefore, the wick is slightly further from the oil than it was before, and the flame actually decreases slightly. There are enough gaminas. If you have a wax candle and you cut off the bottom of a wax candle, so the flame stays exactly the same, but the candle is going to go out early, is that considered kibbutz and Shabbos? That will be the nafgamina between the two shittas. We're going to be machmir, but that's essentially the way to understand the difference between the two shittas. But bottom line is, you light a candle, now all the fuel that is set aside to be burned is mukta, because it would be a problem of kibbutz to remove it. When the wind comes and blows that candle out after ben ashmoshes, or it just didn't manage to burn the oil all the way to the bottom, and now you have leftover oil, and you need some good quality olive oil for your Greek salad, and you want to mix in some olive oil and lemon juice and whatever it is, the lemon juice you have and the olive oil you don't have. Oh, I have leftover olive oil in the candles. Now, probably most of you are saying, oh, gross. But the halacha discusses this. It seems like that it was not so gross in the olden days. And if you're using good quality oil just because there was a flame burning on there, there's no reason why that oil should be spoiled. And essentially, why not take a spoonful of that oil and put it over your lettuce salad? And the answer is because all that oil was mukta ben ashmoshes. You could not help yourself to any of that oil ben ashmoshes. And therefore, since it was mukta ben ashmoshes, it's mukta the whole Shabbos. So even after the candle goes out and there's remaining oil, that is still mukta, and that oil cannot be used. That's one example. Another example is wet laundry. We hold that wet clothing on Shabbos is mukta. Problem that a person might come to squeeze them out, and therefore anything wet, question is how wet, but anything wet is mukta. So now if you have wet clothing on Erev Shabbos, irrelevant of whether they're hanging on the line or hanging over to the bath or on the back of a chair, doesn't make a difference. We know that you're not allowed to hang up laundry on Shabbos because of a Maris Ayin, but if the laundry was hanging already, you're not mechuyev to take it down, and so it could even be hanging on your laundry line. And we say that you shouldn't do laundry on Friday, but if for whatever reason you needed to, you had to, or it got wet because you fell in the bath, or it rained, or something like that, and now you need to hang up that clothing is wet, and wet clothing is mukta. And therefore, if it did not dry within the ben ashmoshes, so when nightfall came, they were still wet. So then we say, given this katoy le ben ashmoshes, katoy le kuliyoma, since it was wet for it was muksa for ben ashmoshes, it's muksa the whole day. So even though the next morning the sun rises and that laundry is as dry as could be, it's Beit Shemesh summer, so it was dry even before the sun rose. Nevertheless, it is mukta, and one may not be metal to move such garments Shabbos. So too, something which is mukta machas cheshon kis, something which has a single purpose, and you wouldn't use it for anything else, we call that mukta machas cheshon kis. We discussed it in a separate share what those examples of that are, but let's take, for example, a camera. A camera is an expensive item. You're not going to use it as a paperweight or as a toy. You're going to use it only as a camera, so that gets a din of cheshon kis. But once it breaks, you don't care what happens. It dropped, it broke, the lens is cracked, you're never going to have it fixed. And now it is headed for the toy chest. So it is still mukta because ben ashmoshes, it was mukta. So even though it for whatever reason got knocked over on Shabbos and fell and broke, and then you know that Moshe Shabbos, you're putting it with the toys, that doesn't make it non-mukta now already. So too, we discuss the bosses of Davara Asur. You put your candlesticks on the table, and you did not put challah on the table becomes mukta. Even if later that night the candles go out, the candles get removed, the goy takes them off, whatever it is, nevertheless the table remains mukta. However, there is an exception to this rule, and we'll mention two of them, is if you have an animal that is alive. An animal that is alive, we say all animals are mukta on Shabbos. And so long as it's alive, it's taka mukta. But you didn't do anything to make this animal mukta. It is his own personal status of being a live creature that makes him mukta. Which means that if his status changes on Shabbos, since I didn't make it, but it's something that's intrinsic in him, and I didn't be mekatzet from my das, so when the reason that makes a mukta goes, that means his life has come to an end. So then we say that animal is no longer mukta. What would be the ramifications, the practical ramifications of that, is that if you have a person who is chole sheyesh bo sakana, he is a sick person where there is danger seen to his life, and the doctor prescribes that he needs to eat meat, and you do not have kosher meat available, which is a very interesting halacha, because even if you have trefa meat available, this halacha still applies, and there's different reasons given to it. I'll come back to it in a second. So let's just say what the halacha is. You don't have kosher meat available for this patient, so you go and you get a cow and whatever kosher animal you want, and you get a shoicha to shecht it, and now you have a carcass but a kosher carcass, because it had shechita, kedasa kedin. So for the sick person, you can take out as much as meat as you need and do what you need to do in order to make it edible, and because that's he's a sick person who needs it. But now you have the rest of this animal lying here, it's kosher meat. It's not and question is, can you have a piece of meat from here? So practically speaking, we're not going to be having a piece of meat because most of us don't eat raw meat. And there's a discussion also, what about salting the meat? So you have to know the halachas of where you can take the meat without having to do salting to it, and eating raw meat and all this. So practically speaking, it's not going to be so practical, because for a healthy person, you're not going to cook it. But from the point of view of mukta, once this animal is shechted, the animal is no longer mukta, and if you had a use for this raw meat, then you could actually use it on Shabbos. Another example of this is if an animal died, and now it's a novella, so it is now become dog meat, and you have dogs to feed, and now you say, oh great, now I have a good supply of dog meat. One may cut up a carcass of a dead animal and give it to your carnivorous animals to eat. So there will be another case of something which was muktzah when banish moshes, but because it wasn't something that I did and I set it aside, it was because it was intrinsic. So then, Taka, you don't have the rule of migadis katzoi, and when the isu which caused it, with the factor that caused it to become muktzah, has been removed, so then it does not stay in its status of muktzah, and the Taka becomes heter. Just to go back what I said about a sick person eating kosher meat, I just want to say something interesting. The halacha is that if a doctor prescribes for a person who's a chone mesukan, who is in a deathly situation, that part of his recovery is the need for meat, and he doesn't define whether kosher or treif meat, he says meat. So why don't you just say, go take a piece of treif meat and feed him that if you don't have kosher meat available? Why is it that even when there is the existence of treif meat, we still say that it's mutter to shecht kosher meat? And there's two reasons given. Number one is that when it comes to feeding treif meat, every kazayis of treif meat is an isur, whereas when it comes to get hold of kosher meat, the only isur is the isur shechita. It's one isur, maybe two, because you've got to cook it. So you have an isur of shechting, an isur of cooking, and then there's no more isurim. After that, it's mutter. Whereas treif meat, every bite, every swallow is already a chatzishur. Once you give another kazayis, it's not an averus, it's continuous averus. That's one way of weighing up the options. But another way is even more interesting, is that because Yidden are preconditioned to eat kosher food, if a person is given treif food, perhaps he would be horrified and disgusted to eat treif food. And we're afraid that as a sick person, we don't want to put him in that situation where he's got to force himself to eat something which he has ingrained in himself his whole life not to eat. So you bring him a piece of horse meat and he's going to say, disgusting, I'd rather die than eat this. So then we go and we shecht kosher meat. So it's an interesting deal with the psychology over here, is that feeding someone treif meat is something that we don't expect him to be able to digest easily because of his training approach to kashrus. Therefore, we allow to be over an Issa Doraisa to save his life because we're afraid he's not going to eat it otherwise. One more prat for today's shiur is produce, fruits, vegetables, grains, whatever it is, produce of Eretz Yisrael, which has not yet had Trumas and Maisers taken, is called Tevel. Tevel is also to eat. One may not eat Tevel until Trumas and Maisers are taken. Since they're also to eat, it therefore is mukta. Here's an example of food that is mukta on Shabbos if it was tevel. To take trumas and maisers on Shabbos is osur. It's a form of tikkun mone. It's like fixing something because you're going from osur to mutter. So we compare it to fixing and therefore we say that it's osur. But if for whatever reason a person took trumas and maisers by mistake, he forgot that it was Shabbos or he didn't know that it was osur, and he went and took trumas and maisers, we'll say the food becomes mutter, because the status of mukta was not something that we put onto the food. It was something intrinsic in the food, and it's not something that you chose to be makatz in the dietary, that you pushed it aside, but rather it was something inherent in the food. And therefore, when the issur was removed, so the only way it can be removed is when someone did it by mistake, because if someone did it on purpose, we leave him with a knas. That we say you cannot eat it till after Shabbos because you did it on purpose. But if it was done by mistake, then we would say that this food becomes non-mukta and actually can be eaten after trypanosomiasis. And that's where we're going to hold it for today. Wishing everybody a wonderful week, and may Metz Hashem next continue.